I'm going to go ahead and start the meeting. The time now is 8:32. It's January 23rd, 2022, and I'm calling the meeting of the Complaint Screening Committee of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. Ms. Michelson, would you please do the roll call?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Davis Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Meyer?
Present.
Dr. Meyer?
Present. Can you hear me?
Hello? Not
Ms. Shreve?
Here. Yeah, we can hear you. It's just very soft, Dr. Myers.
Okay.
Moving to agenda item number three, approval of the minutes for in regards to agenda item three, regarding the December 6th regular session meetings. I'd like to, if there's a vote for the regular session and executive session meetings, Dr. Davis Wilson, you're recused from this item as you did not attend the meeting. So only those would be Dr. Myers and myself. Dr. Myers, do you?
So I've moved to approve the minutes.
And I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. For the January 19 minutes, I am recused. I did not attend that meeting. Is there a motion from the committee members to approve it?
I would make a motion to approve the January meeting minutes.
And I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion. Any disapproval? Hearing none, the motion carries. Item number four is the case discussion and decisions. The Complaint Screening Committee, pursuant to Arizona Revised Statute 32-2081H, may dismiss the complaints appearing on the agenda or refer them to the full board for consideration and action. Complaints dismissed by the committee shall not be disclosed in response to the telephone inquiry or placed on the board's website, pursuant to ARS 32-2081H1. Upon a vote of the majority of the quorum, the committee may go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38431.03A2 to review confidential records, or subsection A3 to receive confidential legal advice from our board's attorney, Ms. Galvin. For those in attendance, please be aware that the chair reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based upon parties present and requests to speak. A person or representative of a person who has filed or received a complaint and is present today at the meeting may make a brief statement up to 5 minutes to the committee when prompted by the chair. The committee may also have questions for those that speak. This is a very important part here. Please use initials only in regards to patients and children and the complainant. Be aware that contents of many records involved in complaints is confidential and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. Be advised that the committee will go into an executive session to discuss confidential information. The first complaint to be discussed today is case 2207 for Dr. Jerry Gentry. Dr. Davis Wilson, you're the lead. Would you provide the committee with a brief overview?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. On September 7th, 2021, the board did receive a complaint by email from Dr. Gentry's former employer. Dr. Gentry was licensed by the Board of Psychologist Examiners in August 2022. In January of 2021, she began working with Centrion, a company that provides private health care services to correctional facilities. On September 7th, the board received a complaint that Dr. Gentry's supervisor alleging that Dr. Gentry's employment was terminated August 31st due to revocation of a security clearance to the Arizona Department of Corrections. Information provided to the board related to the security clearance revocation was related to accusations by a prison inmate that Dr. Gentry engaged in sexual contact, including providing pictures to the inmate. And as such, the Arizona Department of Correction did revocate her security clearance. Without the security clearance, which is a requirement of the job did have to release her from employment. Information was provided to board members related to the email from the inmate specifying, again, that he had pictures of Dr. Gentry and that he did dispose of those pictures upon contact or upon the complaint out of fear that if he kept them, perhaps he would also get in trouble with something. The Dr. Gentry did reply to the board's response for information, stating that she was contacted by her coworker after work requesting to speak with the individual when she returned to work the next day. The colleague reported that he had something of that the individual had something of Dr. Gentry's that he knew she would want back and would like to speak with her. The inmate did also accuse Dr. Gentry of having provided alcohol and other contraband to inmates and asked that the same be provided to him as well. Dr. Gentry did inform the inmate that she would not bring in contraband, and that that was not her role. He did inform Dr. Gentry that he had some pictures of her, and that if he did not do what she had requested, he would use those pictures against her. Dr. Warden inquired if Dr. Gentry provided those photos to the inmate. She did adamantly decline, stating that she had misplaced those photos and lost them at some point, and did not realize that they were missing from her bag until a later time. Dr. Gentry was heading back into the office August 17th when she received a text regarding the employer wanting to discuss the situation further. She did make attempt to explain the situation. The complainant did report that there was no photos found and that there would be further investigations by the Department of Corrections. Dr. Gentry also reported that on August 24th, she became frustrated with the lack of progress and dismissal of her safety concerns. She did send a message inquiring about the updates and relaying that she did not feel safe. Documentation of that was provided to the board as well. Dr. Gentry did also follow up or inquired about the SD, who was the prisoner who made the complaint. Those threats and was told to do the same thing as civilian if they saw something suspicious. I apologize. I'm getting over being ill. Dr. Gentry continues to provide details of the conversations that led up to her dismissal. She, in conclusion, summarizes that she was never terminated, nor ever was there a mention of unlawful fraternization. Dr. Gentry did resign from her position, stating that her concerns were not taken seriously. Dr. Gentry is one who reported her concerns as soon as she became aware of them and followed the appropriate protocols for reporting the inmate's threats. It was never determined how SD obtained the personal photographs of Dr. Gentry, and that is Dr. Gentry's response to the board. The board did receive additional information from ADOC, including a summary of their investigation that, again, they summarized their reasonings for terming the clearance. And staff followed up with additional questions related to those circumstances. During this time, staff also was made aware that or noted that Dr. Gentry did have a dismissal from a prior place of employment as well. I apologize. Board staff did ask if she moved to Arizona following that dismissal in lieu of the board staff asked Dr. Gentry if she, after leaving or moving to Arizona, if she left her employment. She did answer no to the background question on the application that asks about previous terminations. Ms. Michelson, I don't know if you have an update on the status of obtaining information on the previous termination, but I do know board staff is working to retrieve information pertaining to a possible previous termination that was not reported.
Just to update the committee, I do not have any updates at this time. I have not heard back from the agency in any capacity.
Thank you. And that concludes my summary.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Dr. Gentry, I see you're here. Are you represented?
Yes.
Yes, this is Bretton Barber. Hi, honorable committee members. I am counsel for Dr. Gentry.
All right, thank you. And Dr. Gentry, you're here
today. Madam Chair, may we hear from the complainant first? She is present, MR.
Oh, yes, thank you. Sorry. MR?
Hi, yes, this is Dr. Reese.
Would you like to make a statement, and we may have questions for you?
I will just add to what was already shared. I know what was shared was that Dr. Gentry stated her safety was not taken into consideration. However, the day after she shared concern that an inmate wanted her to bring in items she was not allowed to bring in, she was immediately informed she would not be able to return to that yard and work with those inmates while the investigation was being completed. So we did make sure to make sure her safety was taken into consideration. There were several times she asked to return to the yard. She wanted to continue to work with the inmates that were making the allegations. However, because we took her safety seriously and it was our priority, we informed her she still would not be returning. The Department of Corrections walked her off site on the last day of August. And because of DOC walking her off and pulling all of her background clearance on that day, is termination due to her not being able to work for the company if DOC does not approve background clearance.
All right.
Those were the only items I wanted to offer clarification for.
All right. We might have some questions for you if you don't mind. I'll start. So was Dr. Gentry actually given a termination letter? You said she was walked off the prison site. So I don't know if that would tell an employee that they can't work at that DOC or that site, but other opportunities. So was there an official termination letter provided to the doctor?
My understanding is that our HR department sent her a termination letter. However, the Department of Corrections, they do not issue the person the termination letter. That would have come from our HR department. Once someone is walked off, I'm no longer involved in any of the communication, and it's all through our HR department.
Okay. And so you're with the company, not with DOC, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So
correct.
So she works for the company. She's walked off by DOC because of security. Her security was pulled. So you believe the company provided a letter of termination?
Correct.
All right.
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Other questions from the committee members? None? All right. Thank you, MR, for being here today. Now I'm going to move back to Mr. Barber, I believe, who was the counsel, and Dr. Gentry. If you could officially introduce yourselves for the record, and then if one of you would like to make opening statements, we would be happy to have that.
Thank you so much. Again, my name is Bretton Barber. I'm the attorney representing Dr. Gentry. I would like to make just a very brief opening statement and then allow you to ask any questions you might have of my client. Dr. Gentry?
Hi, I'm Dr. Jerry Gentry.
Great, thank you. And you go ahead and make your opening statement.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to note a couple of things that I think are very relevant to this. First of all, the reason this whole investigation began was because Dr. Gentry herself went to the deputy warden and said immediately after the inmate made these accusations and was completely honest and said, this is what happened and I'm concerned and you should know. And that is what launched this investigation. ADOC, from the investigative materials, did do an investigation. They never found any photographs, at least that we've been provided. So I think that's also important. The other thing I would say that I think is very important is that Dr. Gentry has been completely forthcoming and willing to work with the staff. And additionally, I think it's important to note that, if in the state of Arizona under ARS Title 13, Section 1419, it's a class 5 felony to have any sort of sexual conduct with an inmate. If you are employed by either ADOC or one of their contractors. And at the conclusion of their investigation, ADOC said, and it's in the investigative materials, they are not going to ask that any charges be filed. So I guess what I'm getting at is this seems like a very circumstantial situation. Dr. Gentry initiated all of this. An investigation was done. There was really no evidence other than a he said, she said. And I just think that on its face, obviously, it's a very concerning allegation. But holistically, when you look at it, if they were confident that she had done something inappropriate with an inmate, I mean, that would be referred to the prosecutor's office. And they explicitly stated they're not doing that. So I'm not going to say anything else because I don't want to take up any more time. I want to make sure that you have enough time to ask any questions of Dr. Gentry you might have.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Barber. Board members, have any questions for Dr. Gentry?
I do have a couple, Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Dr. Gentry, can you provide for us an account of the photos? I know you provided that in your response, but I would like to hear from you as to what the photos contained, why they were brought on the work site, and what you suspect may have occurred with them.
So there was approximately 10 of them. They were pictures of myself in lingerie, nothing, no nudity or anything, just more or less kind of, I guess, sexy pictures that I had printed out. I was going to try and make something for my husband. Was not aware that I had brought them onto the prison grounds, had completely forgotten about them. I'd realized I lost them. It was back in June. Realized I lost them, didn't think anything of it because I wouldn't have ever brought them onto the prison grounds. And wasn't even reminded of them until the inmate made his threat.
Okay, thank you. And with regard to the employment in California, were you terminated from your place of employment in California?
No.
Okay. Can you explain to us why you departed from that employment from your perspective?
So the go ahead.
I'm going to just jump in. I would have to advise my client not to answer that question simply because she is under a non-disclosure agreement that she signed. She did sign a release allowing the board to obtain those records, but she would face severe penalties if she were to discuss those.
A copy of that non-disclosure agreement been provided to the board?
I'm sorry?
Did you provide a copy of that non-disclosure agreement to the board?
I have not.
Would you be able to do that?
I would need to review it, but most likely I'm sure we could.
Okay. Then it would be my request that occur. That is all the questions I have at this time.
Can I just add one little thing that I feel comfortable sharing with regard to that, about my previous employment? Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
So in June, when I left Sharper Future, I was needing to study for the ECCC, so I wanted to focus on that. So that was my primary reason. I wasn't working prior to moving to Arizona, because I wanted to study for licensure.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Myers, do you have any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for being here, Dr. Gentry. My focus is about kind of, I guess, what seemed like an abrupt resignation from Centurion. You said that you'd not received any notice from them. They weren't responding to you, so you quit. Can you walk me through that decision? If you wanted to remain with them and it was a lack of communication for a day or so, why the sudden resignation?
So it wasn't just the lack of communication for a day or so. It was the whole 2 weeks from the time I reported it all the way through until I came in my resignation. I felt like I was having to follow up continuously and kept addressing or attempting to address like my safety concerns. The day after I reported this inmate, I had requested that he not be able to make phone calls or any emails, because part of his threat was that he could, it's just one phone call, basically anyone to the outside. And so I was concerned for my safety as well as my family's. I kept trying to follow up, wasn't hearing anything back. And then I more or less, I guess, decided it wasn't worth it.
And those text messages are provided, where she's asking about her safety, et cetera.
Okay. Okay, thank you. And then so the other thing I'm curious about is MR stated that their HR department would have sent a resignation or a termination letter to you. Did you receive any documentation from Centurion?
The termination report, the first time I seen it was when it was attached for my second, for the follow-up question. It's included as along with like the two emails. That was the first time I saw the termination report. I had received, however, a week or so after I had turned in my resignation, information regarding like my pay and my 401k, that type of stuff, how to access it moving forward.
Just to be clear though, Dr. Gentry, did you ever receive from Centurion a termination letter?
No.
So the involuntary termination report from Centurion was on 8/31. Okay, those are all my questions. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. What date did you send the, do you know what date you sent the email stating that you're resigning?
September 1st.
September 1st?
Yes.
Okay. And there is an involuntary report, but it looked to me as though that was a database type of a, did you ever receive a copy of that?
Of the termination report?
Yeah.
No, not from Centurion. No.
She didn't see that until board staff provided it to her.
Got it. Okay. So there is no termination, and nor do we have one in our file, Ms. Michelson. I couldn't find one, correct?
There was not. That's correct.
Okay. Dr. Gentry, when you got walked off this site, what was your understanding of, what was your explanation for that? And what was your understanding when you got walked off the site?
That warden of that site had said, due to security reasons, he didn't want me on the complex. He specifically said Centurion may have another position for you or somewhere else. And so I just assumed I was no longer being permitted onto that complex at that certain time.
And when you say security reasons, what do you mean by that?
Because, well, I took it as because of the threats made against me and my family members as well. And if I happen to accidentally bring in the photos and lose them, I don't know. I just felt like, I mean, it kind of made it seem he couldn't have me there just for security reasons. So I took it to mean for my safety.
All right. And I read all the documentation, but I also want to go over. So when you meet with the prisoners to provide counseling services, it's stated that you meet in you have a designated room. It sounds like there's cameras. Can you explain that? And are you alone? Is there, what is that situation like? What is it? Can you kind of enlighten us on that?
Yeah. So there's two different rooms that we would use. One was typically in the cell block upstairs. It was a caged area. The inmate would be brought out, put in the cage, uncuffed at that time, but locked behind the cage. And typically we would sit on a chair or a table just in there, all equipped with camera. And there's a big window with officers that can see in. Actually, there's two windows that can see in. And then the other room is the triage room, where there's a desk and a sink, I believe. Inmates are placed there. They're cuffed with their ankle as well as their wrist. And there's also cameras and then a big glass window. And typically, if I was not alone, someone was standing typically outside of that window, whether an officer or another coworker.
All right. And as a psychologist, I don't have any experience being in DOC. Are you ever around or roaming or with them where they are not in a controlled environment?
No. Absolutely not.
Right. Are there any further questions from the board members? All right. Hearing none, we do appreciate everyone's participation in answering these questions. The committee will now move into deliberations. Please note deliberations is a time for the committee members to deliberate the case among themselves without interruption from the complainant, licensee, or attorneys representing the licensee. Dr. Davis-Wilson, since you're the lead, do you want to start with some comments?
I think.
Can I interrupt for a second?
Okay.
Could we go into executive session for receiving legal advice?
Ms. Galvin, am I okay doing that as far as protocol right now?
Yes, if we have a second and a vote.
All right, thank you. Dr. Davis-Wilson, do you second?
I do.
All right, we have a motion and a second to go in executive session. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So we're going to move into executive session. We're going to magically disappear. Please stay where you're at, and we will then magically reappear in a few minutes. All right, we've magically reappeared. Thank you, everybody, for your patience. We're going to continue. Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Before I begin, I do have one question for Dr. Gentry. Dr. Gentry, with regard to your prior employment with Sharper Future, did you resign in lieu of termination?
No.
Okay. I have no further questions. I will begin my summary. I'm a little taken back by the lack of information related to the departure of the other employer. I also am confused, though it would be speculating, as to how photos of that nature would become in the hands of an inmate. Having said that, and having, you know, kind of reviewed that there's potentially a pattern here, I think one of the challenges is that, you know, we're tasked with identifying whether or not a rule or statute of ours has been violated. And I'm falling short on the evidence to support this. I do think that having the opportunity to have Mr. Barber review the non-disclosure agreement could add some peace, recognizing that that could potentially continue, that could or could not help us. Who knows there? But beyond that, I think security clearances oftentimes are kind of a little bit finicky. They don't have to have, is my understanding, they don't have to have facts specific to why they will revoke those. They could have suspicion or concerns or what have you. And I'm not seeing that even the Department of Corrections has identified facts that that would align with a violation of our, even our code of conduct. Again, there could be, you know, speculation, but in my opinion, that's kind of a reach. And so I'm curious about whether or not we are able to review the non-disclosure agreement, but I'm also unsure if that would change the information we have before us today.
Thank you. I would actually say I kind of see it just differently, respectfully, Dr. Davis-Wilson. I guess my concern is there were photos that were, according to the DOC report, that they obtained. According to the report, Dr. Gentry identified there were tattoos on the person in the photos that, as I recall, said she had, those were her tattoos. So I guess I would be concerned on how photos like that were obtained by inmates, former clients. That doesn't seem obviously not appropriate. So I would have there, I have concerns about that. And I would want to maybe look at that. I mean, that to me would be possibly a violation of ARS 32-2061-16 on professional conduct. You know, possibly gross negligence in the practice of psychology, or G, engaging or offering to engage as a psychologist in activities not congruent with the psychologist's professional education and training. I mean, this is a psychologist that's working at a prison that obviously you have very structured policies and guidelines. How did pictures like that just get in the hands of prisoners? And maybe they dropped, who knows, but it's still, I think you still have a sense of responsibility for that, whatever you bring into a prison facility. So that does concern me and bring me up enough for what was, you know, was it more than just that? So I have a little bit more concern, given that the photos were found and that they were identifiable to the doctor. Those are just some thoughts. Dr. Myers?
Well, and so even if you accidentally brought in any material into the prison setting, you wouldn't be walking around with that purse or briefcase or whatever into secured areas. So for them to get from a personal space where they could have accidentally been brought in to get into the hands of inmates is concerning. And we have allegations from clients that there were inappropriate sexual relations going on. So it's not just the pictures. There are allegations of misconduct from the clients. And so we can't ignore that either. And then you add the, what I thought was odd of resigning, so quickly with no communication, with the company, seems like a resignation in lieu of termination that was coming. In addition to, we don't know what's going on at the previous employment. I think there's too much here to be able to explain away.
I just have, I would agree with that. I just have, for me, it's the photos that came, they're of her, that this isn't, you know, in a prison situation. I do believe she made comments about, you know, that there was 2 weeks had gone by. She was concerned about safety, the termination. But to me is, you know, I mean, it's questionable, but I'm not too concerned about that as much as, I do feel there's enough to move it forward to the full board to look at, to determine, if they feel the same and if, any type of action should go forward. I will make a motion that we move this to the full board, with violations of ARS 32-2061-16, unprofessional conduct. And I would add, I guess, Dr. Myers, I'd look at you as for sure. I think, engaging or offering to engage as a psychologist in activities not congruent with a psychologist's professional education, training, and experience. And that's with in regards to the photos being found. There's also potentially gross negligence in the practice, but I don't know if that really pertains. This isn't practicing of psychology as much as the procedures of the photos. So I feel strongly about G, engaging or offering to engage in as a psychologist in activities not congruent. So, that would be a motion.
I mean, that tends to be focused on providing services that are not professional. I don't know that that's the case here. There's not been any allegation of her psychological services were inappropriate.
But I think to me, engaging or offering to engage as a psychologist in activities not congruent with the psychologist's professional education, training, and experience, providing or in a psychologist in a prison, the pictures are not.
I don't think that had anything to do with psychological services.
This doesn't say services. It says activities.
As a psychologist.
So are you saying that you don't feel there's a violation at all?
No, I think there's potentially a violation of. And I can't find my list. I'm so sorry.
Ms. Galvin, I'm looking.
It's
why exploiting a client or patient, student, or cipher, but I don't think this is exploiting.
No, it's F, sexual intimacies or sexual intercourse. With a current client or patient, is what one of the allegations is, right? And then if we just focus on the pictures, that would be DD, dual relationship, of ethical standards.
Okay. I don't have yet. What would number do, Ms. Michelson, do you have that? The dual relationship?
I'm looking it up in the code. I see 10.05 sexual intimacies with the client. Let me see about dual relationship. 3.05 of the code is multiple relationships.
Okay, so I'm going to restructure then my motion. So it would be violation of ARS, potential violation of ARS 32-2061-16F, sexual intimacies or sexual intercourse with a client or with a current client or patient or supervisee or with a former client or patient within 2 years after the cessation or termination of treatment for the purpose of this subdivision of sexual intercourse has the same meaning as prescribed in section 13-1401. And then also, violation of DD ethics code 3.05, multiple relationships, dual multiple relationships, and then 10.05, which was dual relationships.
10.06 is sexual intimacy.
Okay, so I need to clearly say, I don't have that in front of me, so I just need someone to help me out here. That's not on my
10.06, sexual intimacies with relatives.
It's actually 10.05, which is sexual intimacies with client therapy, current therapy client or patients.
Yes,
okay, so 10.05, and then as previously said, 3.05, which is multiple relationships.
This is Jean Galvin. I would ask that you consider, and this doesn't mean that there was a violation, but I would ask that you consider G and O, and maybe the full board, just so that it's noticed properly and we can at least discuss whether those are applicable.
All right. G is the one that I mentioned previously. I agree with that. And
O is providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe or otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by current standards of practice. But for her being a psychologist, she would not be on that complex. She's providing services, and she brought in the photo somehow ended up in the hands of inmates on that complex she was treating.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, might Y be one additional?
Exploiting a client or patient, student or supervisee? Yes.
It's very, very broad.
Again, broad.
I mean, the exploitation, I think there was nothing other than what's covered more specifically in what we've already talked about.
But I think it falls within that. It's on the umbrella of it. So if I can summarize, so I'm going to repeat.
Well, and I'd also like consideration for Z, which is the failing to report to the board possible act of unprofessional conduct. Oh, no, that's another one. Aren't we required if we lose privileges, don't we have to report that?
But I don't think that's the security issue. The security issue, I don't think, falls within that. She lost her security rating or whatever that you call it. Dr. Davis-Wilson, any comments?
I would just add that I would like to see the attempt to receive the non-disclosure letter in the meantime while we're working towards the full board meeting.
Okay, so I'm going to restate my motion since we've after this discussion. So a potential violation of ARS 32-2061. 16 on professional conduct, and it includes F, G, O, Y, DD, which is a violation of ethical standards 3.05, and 10.05. That's my motion.
And I would second
that. We move it to the full board for those considerations.
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. You'll be contacted by our board when this is placed on an agenda in the future. All right. Thank you very much for
participating. Thank you very much to the honorable board members.
All right. We're now going to move to item 4B, complaint T2203. Dr. Lori, is it Witter? You're on mute.
Weeders.
Dr. Weeders. Dr. Myers, you're the lead. If you'd like to provide an overview. And you're on mute.
All that. Thank you, Madam Chair. On December 16th, 2021, board staff seeing the date. Okay, in November 5th, 2021, we received an anonymous complaint about Dr. Weeders. Based on her website, she was representing herself as an industrial organizational psychologist. At its public meeting on December 10th, the board reviewed this complaint along with information on the website and LinkedIn, and the board elected to open a complaint related to concerns that Dr. Weeders may be advertising and providing services that constitute a violation of ARS 32-2084, representing as oneself as a psychologist or using a psychology term. Dr. Weeders is not a licensed psychologist in Arizona, nor does she have a psychology degree. And the board requested that Dr. Weeders provide a response to this. Dr. Weeders stated that she is dedicated to the industrial organizational psychology evolution. Her education includes a Bachelor of Science degree in education, a master's degree in business management, and a PhD in organization and management with a specialization in human resources. She notes that she has more than 20 years experience teaching and designing courses in higher ed. She's worked with doctoral candidates for Doctor of Education, DBA, and PhD programs. She's previously worked in organizations, but in creating a private consulting practice, she sought out the industrial organizational psychologist designation. She applied to the Society of IO Psychology and was initially turned down because she did not have a psychology degree. She then applied to APA and was able to join and join the Society of IO Psychology and join the Society of Consulting Psychology. She's been an APA member since that time. For the last 11 years, she's worked under the assumption that she can call herself an IO psychologist because of those registrations and those associations. She said she does not provide counseling outside of a workplace example or scenario. Um, And she has done work with several of these associations and organizations. As of February 15th, 2022, after Dr. Weider's response was received, her website has been changed, and the reference to IO psychology or psychologist has been removed. And that concludes my summary.
Thank you, Dr. Myers. Right, and Dr. Weider, thank you for being here today. Would you, or any of you, an opportunity to make any comments you'd like, and then we might have some questions.
Well, thank you very much, and I'm very honored to be here to advocate for the industrial organizational psychology designations in the world. I got my degree in 2007. For the invent and the upswing of industrial psychology. 2007, the closest degree I could get to that was the organization and management with a specialization in human resources. Now, human resources has everything to do with the human life cycle, from the beginning of recruiting and hiring through the handoff to teams to success, to the growth in the job and on to succession planning. So I started my career in learning and development, executive development, internal consulting inside of an organization. So I was actually an employee for many years. I grew organizational development programs, quality programs. I mean, I've grown all kinds of programs inside of organizations. My doctorate is actually studying human behavior inside of a call center. And I looked at 133 predictive index profiles, which brings up a dashboard of about 13 indicators, and looked at inbound call center representatives and why they were leaving. So the retention rate. So I looked at 133 profiles, built a big spreadsheet, was able to determine one behavior they were hiring almost consistently in the inbound call center was causing most of the attrition. I then went through and helped them redesign that entire call center to meet the behaviors that we needed to bring into the call center to retain. They went from a 45% attrition rate down to 14. So there, and this was over about a year and a half. So that really started my career of really looking inside of organizations and doing this work. So I have a breadth of clients that could care less about my title. They care more about the results that I bring. I have clients that are size of 8 people, 3 people, up to 800 to 8,000. Typically, I'm doing what we call a Ben RB, where have you been? Where are you now? Looking at celebrations and some lessons learned, and then looking at where they want to go, determining next steps, level of effort, and then looking at the layers. Is it leaders, teams, et cetera? So I've been doing this for a long time. I've created about over 30 doctors through my work in the last 11 years, from DBAs to psychs. I have right now I run the local group for PSYOP here in Arizona, and it's called the Arizona Collaborative. And once a month, we bring students and professionals together who want the betterment of business. And we feature a business where we let them talk about a situation, and then we as a collaborative group solve their problems in about an hour and a half. We do it with a follow-up call to them, and we make sure that they are they can implement things, and that's all free of charge for the client. So I've been a huge advocate of industrial psychology for so many years, and this was very disappointing at a lot of levels. I will answer any questions you have now. And I'm kind of disappointed we're not, I'm going to say that we're not represented on a board like this.
Thank you for your comments. Board members, questions?
Yes,
Dr. Please. Myers.
So I think that there's a difference between association memberships versus licensure at a professional practice. The term psychologist is protected by law. Industrial organizational psychologists can become licensed. There are questions about industrial organizational practice on the EPPP. Okay, and there, in most states, the route for licensure for any type of psychologist is to go through the professional board, including industrial organizational psychologists. And IO psych programs have been in existence for decades. To be able to qualify potentially to set for licensure, however, you have to go to a program that identifies itself as specializing in psychology. And those exist. Now, typically they're at the master's level. I believe there are some doctoral programs at for IO psychology, but the kind of the standard of practice has been a master's, which does not qualify for licensure. However, there is a route there, but to have a degree, and this is not questioning the quality of work that you're doing, but there are lots of industrial organizational psychologists who are following the laws to call themselves that and have the training to do that. The concern here is that being a member of any association, regardless of their requirements, does not have any bearing on the legal status and licensure. That wasn't a question there. I'm so sorry. The question is, what psychology program did you go through to be able to say that you're a psychologist in any form?
Okay, well, in all of the programs, my master's, my undergrad's in education, so it had to have psychology programs attached to it. My master's is in management, which had organizational behavior, psychology.
But taking psychology classes does not make it a psychology program.
Right.
If you can get a bachelor's in psychology, you can get a master's in psychology.
Those I understand.
Are programs that are focused on psychology.
But you can't say human resource management is not psychology of the organization and the humans that work in it.
You can say that is not a psychology program.
I agree. I agree. It's not on paper. I agree. And so when I saw that, I rectified the situation.
Thank you. That's my only question.
So, and I do believe we saw that in our documentations that you've changed your LinkedIn and you've changed the documentation. It's really clear in regards to the statute and, you know, in Arizona of the use of psychologist and I minored in psych, but I am not a psychologist. You know, I'm on the board as a public member. So, I'm a big advocate of human resources, but it's all in how I guess it's presented in Arizona. It's very clear the use of psychologist. So that's just really important and maybe to keep that in mind. I'm sure you do very great work and help out those organizations, but there are certain parameters in regards to our world and the statute of what, you know, people can use that word for. Dr. Davis-Wilson, do you have any questions or?
Yeah, I would just add to that. And this is a similar conversation that we're having with OBM practitioners on the behavior analyst side as well. I think what it comes down to in how our statute reads, and I just want to make sure that this perspective is just provided to the doctor, is that the general public is the one that sees this. And while we understand the way that industrial and organizational psychology works as fellow colleagues, we understand, like I said, in behavior health or the behavior analysis side, we have the OBM kind of conversations going, and we understand that the general public, the ones that see this, the ones that may seek services, the ones that may be employed at a place receiving these services may not understand those positions. And part of the kind of Practice and Title Act is to ensure that we're not giving some sort of not intentional, but false information to the general public. And so we have to look at this from the perspective, not from us as your colleagues, but from the perspective of somebody who may just see that word on a website. There's still stigma around some of the use of psychological services and mental health access to mental health services. There's still, so I want to acknowledge and hear what you're saying. But I want to also say that, you know, that law goes back to the just general public who may not understand any of those differences. And that's why it's important that terminology is cleared up.
Can I ask a question?
Yes. First, Dr. Davis Wilson, thanks for clarifying that. That's important. Go ahead.
Thank you, by the way. Thank you, all of you. This is providing a lot of perspective for me. Grand Canyon University went through my transcripts and approved me to teach in their IO psychology group or in there. So I've been teaching psychology and industrial psychology classes for several years. So I'm trying to, as a accrediting body, they would have had to gone through everything and approve me to do that. So there were layers of things that I think brought me to this place today.
And I can appreciate that. I also teach, and I think they look at experience and education and background, and there's a lot of different things that go into that. But again, it's a degree, like Dr. Meyer said. You know, you go through, you get a psychologist degree. I don't have a psychologist degree. I mean, we have the tools that we have, but there's definitely limits, and we do want to make sure. And I represent the public on this board. Is, you know, when you say you're a psychologist, an industrial psychologist, the perception could be that you are an actual psychologist, you know, with those. And we want to make sure that people understand that. So any other questions?
Well, I'd also like to respond to that. So a school can hire a subject matter expert to teach on anything that they want. You don't have to be a psychologist necessarily to teach about your experience that may include psychological concepts, right? If you have the expertise to teach that, you cannot call yourself a psychologist. But as you said, there are psychological concepts in human resources, in business, in so many different fields. So it's not like we are trying to wall off that knowledge or expertise. This is about, as Dr. Davis Wilson explained, protecting the practice of psychology for public perception. So as far as accreditation, GCU is not accredited by the APA. To have an educational program accredited, you typically have to meet so many requirements. Not all of our faculty at ASU have to be psychologists by training to teach. We do have to have a certain percentage of core faculty that are psychologists. Not all of them have to be licensed. So different accrediting bodies can accredit a program at different levels. This is not about questioning at all your expertise or your ability to teach or anything. It is saying you, by law, you cannot hold yourself to be a psychologist or practice in psychology.
Yep, and I understand that.
And a few states do have, so we specify that we're not regulating school psychology if they're practicing within a school. Arizona does not have that carve out to say we do or do not regulate industrial organizational psychology. Something that maybe should be considered at another point to develop more clarity on this. But as it stands now, to practice as an industrial organizational psychologist, you would have to be licensed by this board.
And how do I do that? Can I ask that?
So you would submit an application for licensure through our board, and would have to demonstrate that you meet the requirements, the educational requirements. You have to do an applied internship. You have to have supervised hours providing practice. The board is not, or our license is not set up to focus on industrial organizational practice. You see this in the licensing exam, the ACCP. Clinical students always complained about all the IO questions in there, and IO psychologists always complain about all the clinical questions in there, but it's professional practice broadly as a psychologist. So you would just need to look at do you meet the requirements for licensure here? But I don't believe any state has specific licensure for IO psychology. It's either they say they don't cover that, or you just get licensed as a psychologist.
Yeah, there's in Washington State, I think it's Washington State. I'm building a baseline looking at each state in the licensure so I understand it. And Washington, I believe it's Washington. I'll have to go back to my spreadsheet, but they offer a modified like a licensure or something or other that provides us with the ability to apply to it and then go through some coursework and then get licensed. Versus going back and to get another master's degree just doesn't make a lot of sense. So I will just abandon the whole title thing. It doesn't really matter to my clients what my title is.
Well, and we appreciate your responsiveness to this and the changes to all of the public-facing material.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions?
Madam Chair, I just wanted to add to Dr. Meyer's point and to kind of the conversation about the universities. That is addressed in our statute too. So if you are teaching for a university and those subject matters are a component of your job arrangements from them, then there is an exemption to licensure. So you can still perform those duties so long as it's a component of your job with the university. And then again, it's just about, I think, as you've alluded to, just making sure that we're not using titles that mislead the public. And again, on the behavior analysis side, we see this, it's an incoming hot topic with the OBM practice as well. And we're having all these same conversations of, should OBM practitioners be licensed? Should they not? Should they, you know, all these same conversations. So I think it is just about being cautious again of who the end user is. And then as it pertains to your role at the university, we do address that in statute because we do recognize that the universities will hire subject matter experts without that need. And so, or without that license piece. And so you're safe to continue those as well.
Thank you for that.
All right. Any further questions? Hearing none, Dr. Myers, we're going to move into deliberations. Deliberations is time for the committee members to discuss among themselves without any interruptions. Dr. Myers, would you like to start?
I think we've already done all of our deliberations during the question.
I know, but we have to officially just...
Dr. Wieters has responded to our concerns, changed everything. So I would make a motion to dismiss this complaint.
We have a motion to dismiss. Is there a second?
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
I just have one more comment, and that's Dr. Wieters. Keep up that good fight. I appreciate the tracking, the getting to know kind of the status of the industrial organization field, working on those subcommittees, putting yourself out there in that capacity as somebody who wants to advance industrial organization, even if that takes it somewhere to its own licensing at some point. Like I said, as a behavior analyst, we were there. we also started there. Now you guys have been, IO psychology has been around a lot longer. But I do appreciate the amount of work you're giving back to the community, because I do think that industrial organizational psychology concepts are very valuable to businesses. And so again, the work that you're doing is valuable and appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have a motion and we have a second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Dr. Weider, thank you for coming today. We do appreciate that.
Appreciate
the discussion. All right, the last item on our agenda is item number 5, adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn this meeting?
So moved.
Motion from Dr. Davis-Wilson, a second from Dr. Myers. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. And I would like to thank staff. Thank you so much for preparing us and getting us all this information. And of course, Ms. Galvin, for your wonderful legal advice. We do really appreciate it. You guys are awesome. All right. Everyone have a great day.
Thank you.
Thanks, you too.